I'll introduce myself. My name is Rich Schieber. I'm a pediatrician and epidemiologist. Recently, with the National Immunization Program, NCIRD, at CDC. And I undertook this project last summer, actually, so that we could find out a little bit more about what's going on with mass school vaccination clinics around the country for seasonal flu. And so I'm going to give this presentation, and then Lisa Swank is going to come up and give hers, and we'll just skip my Q&A session, and we'll go from mine to hers, and then we'll open it up for questions from the audience. I presume my voice is being well heard all around, and you know where the door is if this is horribly boring. So, to begin, all good things begin with background. Talk just a moment about the prior use of mass school vaccination programs in the United States. They were used in polio. That was about the time I was pre-kindergarten, I think. And I actually remember getting that little sugar cube. I remember the table I was sitting at. I remember where I was sitting and which direction I was facing and where my mommy was and so on. So that must have been a successful program. More recently, the Hep B program in the 90s when that came out for adolescents, and as we'll see in the next slide, seasonal influenza in Japan. Of course, mass vaccinations have been important in outbreaks and or would-be outbreaks as well. The Japanese school vaccination program curve looks like this, beginning from 1950 going on to the late 1990s. In fact, there was a beginning drop down to here, leveling out or so for a moment, for vaccination in the excess deaths attributed to pneumonia and influenza. And then they began vaccinating all school kids with TIV. And the drop continued and then generally settled down until about 1987, at which point they made the TIV school dose optional. And in the Cox postulates concept, taking away the agent, we then saw a return of excess deaths. This is used as presumptive evidence that a mass school vaccination program would reduce the incidence of pneumonia and influenza in the general population if school children were mass vaccinated. The purpose of our study, and it's really a proof of concept study, was to answer these four questions. Would this be successful? Is it feasible? Is it acceptable to those who are doing it? And is it sustainable? We used two data sources. One, as you're aware, is that MedImmune offered to a couple of dozen programs in 2005 and 6 and to somewhat fewer programs in 06, 07, free LAIV for their school-based programs. And so we got their list of places that they had supported. We, at the same time, polled all state immunization managers, and some of you in the room may have been polled about this, and we got a separate list, and then we combined them and tried to reach everyone. So it was, in essence, what the behavioral folks call a snowball sampling. Then with that information, we began a phone survey of the local health department person or persons most closely tied to the program, who set up the program, and found out some information about their vaccination rates as well as other general information, and the stuff they sent out to the parents and the consent forms that they used, that was all sent to us also. Here's the characteristics of the sample that resulted. We reached 24 programs and got successful complete information from 23 of those. We are missing some hard data on one of those. There were 33 known programs, and here you can see the distribution. We had seven of them that involved only one or two schools. with different age groups, four of them that involved multiple schools, although the same age group, four of them immunized the entire district, and nine of them dealt with one or more counties. There were actually, there was one county that I'll talk about that was a very large county in California, and we had to deal with it separately. By age group then, the majority far and away were elementary school kids. And middle school, with or without grades 5 or 6, were about 1 out of 8 programs. High school, about the same number, and K through 12, relatively few. So there were over 500 sites that were where the mass school vaccination clinics were held during this 2-year period. Now, in the yellow asterisk down here, you see that there were 230 sites from 23 of these programs, and about a slightly larger number from one single large California county. Anybody here from California who might recognize that county? Are you guys those? Well, I can't say that, but someone else I think just did. The informed consent process was a bear. We had to deal with HIPAA. We had to deal with FERPA. It was highly labor-intensive because most of these programs relied on school-based personnel because of FERPA to follow up with parents who had not consented one way or the other, or who had questions about the program. It was also paper-intensive, and schools don't always do so well with a lot of providing a lot of paper. In general, for the elementary school kids, the consent was sent home in a packet, you know, the backpack of the kids. And in middle and high schools, it was mailed. Just as an aside, I'll tell you a story about a program where the principal of an elementary school was doing his rounds at the end of the day. And he came into the kindergarten class and saw a wastebasket that was completely filled with these forms. Is that your program? You're shaking your head. You know what happened. Yeah. Maybe I told you the story. So he's trying to figure out what happened. And going back to the teacher the next day, it turns out there was one kid in the class, sort of a ringleader, I guess. And the kid had figured out, albeit erroneously, that if he took this paper home, his parents were going to give permission for him to get another shot. So he convinces all his friends that they don't want another shot and they should dump this on the way out the door, which they did. There are colleges that are actually looking at that child right now. This program generated many calls to school offices for more information, to doctors. Two kinds of questions, is my child eligible for VFC, as well as should I have the school give this LAIV, and school nurses for more information. And finally, the consent was matched to the child on the day of the clinic. And just a word about that, a two-time matching is very important so that you're sure that you are immunizing the right kid. In fact, there was one child to be nameless in the United States who had the same name as another kid's common name, first and last, in the same class, in the same school, and the wrong kid was immunized. That was managed administratively, and no harm in the end was done, or came to the child. But that double matching is very important. And it's difficult to do because, by the way, you know, if you're a nurse or a volunteer at the reception desk as the kids come in and you use something like, would you please tell me your mother's name, you know, so that I can verify this, and little kindergarten says, my mommy's name is Mommy. You know, what help is that? All right. In the phone survey, we found this information. Of course, we got the age groups that were vaccinated. We keyed in on the personnel requirements, both the health department requirements, the schools, the number of volunteers, and so on. I can't present all that information here. It's voluminous. And by the way, we're preparing a special supplement for pediatrics, which hopefully will be out early next calendar year. It's going to be too late for this, but It will have a series of articles about how these mass school vaccination clinics proceeded around the country. We looked at the barriers and the facilitators to success, both getting the permission and then actually accomplishing it, whether LAIV was used only or whether TIV was used for some children or some adults, how much classroom time was disrupted, how they obtained consents, how they obtained follow-up, how payment was made if it was deemed to be that element, whether or not there was reporting back to parents or docs or through the state registry, and finally whether the program thought they would do it, the same program, the following year. The clinic features required between 2 and 4 hours per clinic, typically several clinics. The information I'm going to show you is not for the mop-up clinics, not for the kids less than 9 who needed a second dose of LAIV, just for the first dose. So there are actually more vaccinations than I'm going to show you here. There was typically a 20-minute setup and a 20-minute strike period. Multiple clinics each day was common. They'd go to one place in the morning, strike, have lunch, go to a second place. The dry ice storage time was reasonable and appropriate and is basically a non-issue now that the MedImmune brand of LAIV doesn't require such a cold temperature. And these clinics took place in the school pretty much everywhere. The gym, an empty classroom, what we used to call the library, I guess now is the media center, the hallway. One group used an outside mobile van that was particularly effective. They had it before this, so it didn't cost them anything extra. Teacher's lounge, school nursing station, wherever you could imagine. This is a drawing of the clinic flow. Basically, the teacher typically stayed back in the classroom with the kids who were not going to get immunized. And then a volunteer, and one was sufficient, brought the kids to wherever they were going to go. They encountered most of the time a registration desk, sometimes not. That was manned by a volunteer or a nurse who did the first check. They came in through one door for that. And the best programs, as far as flow went, they said had one door for entry and a second door for exit, and it was much less confusing. From the registration desk, then they were sent to one of several nursing tables. The number of tables varied from 2 to about 6. And there was a nurse administering the LAIV and or TIV at those stations, usually LAIV. Typically, the same nurse would take it out of the dry ice in advance, let it sit, warm it up by hand, talk with the kid, double-check the consent form, and then administer it, have a tissue for the kid, send the child to a collecting station where another volunteer would take the children en masse back to the classroom. Total turnaround time, on the average, measured 18 minutes. So they really were not out of class very long. Payment typically came through VFC or through MedImmune that donated this vaccine, or in some cases from extra that was made available from the pandemic flu exercises, or through the graciousness of the health department. These were universal or selectively universal for some vaccines, states. Two programs took payment at the point of service. They didn't feel that that was very onerous. One very small program billed third parties for the siblings and the parents. That seemed to work out well for them, but it was a small program. There were two community vaccinators, Maxim and Wellness, and these were used in two programs, but they didn't bill. They were given a contract to set up and manage the program from the local health department. Results. So the first question, again, we asked was, were these successful? So for the 23 of the 24 programs that reported hard data, the number of primary vaccinations given was 61,000 of 363,000 enrollees. which would be a vaccination rate of 17%. It's hard to fix on any single number for the vaccination rate, and honestly, here's why. When you start to break it out by grade school level, what you see is the vaccination rate approached 50% for elementary school kids and then dropped down for middle and high school kids. For those relatively few programs that had K through 12, it was relatively high, I think, because of the elementary component. And overall, because there were so many elementary school kids that were vaccinated compared to the others, it was a 30% vaccination rate. So in this sense, if you take out that large single county, what you have is, for all of them, a 30% vaccination rate, and for elementary schools, nearly 50% vaccination rate. Really not too shabby. For that single large county, which itself had 273 sites, even the elementary school rate was less than 20%, as you see here. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is the range, and I used range here rather than standard deviation. It would have been the same sort of spread. And you see that even for elementary school kids, they range from 0 up to 100%. And so most of these have very wide ranges, quite different expectations depending on the program and the site. So the second question we tried to answer, was it feasible? Well, the planning time is important because there's a lot of headaches that go into that. And about two-thirds of them had a short planning time of less than 2 months. Most of them thought that was sufficient. The clinic time that they distributed their services over was relatively short. Two-thirds or so had clinics that were less than a half day. And again, the 18-minute class time, I think, takes care of the teacher's concerns that these kids are not going to be educated that day. It was important to find sufficient nurses, and most programs pulled nurses from their regular work from somewhere else, included school nurses, or in bigger schools left that school nurse to the side to do her usual activities and had another cadre of nurses to take care of the vaccination program. In all cases that I'm reporting here, the nurses administered the vaccine. If you look at Jim King's articles, in Pediatrics and in New England Journal, he had volunteers administering the vaccines. The parent volunteers, though, were essential in helping manage the children and the flow of the clinic. It really would have been a different, completely different animal had they not been there. So this is a very appropriate use for parents and volunteers. The hardest part, again, was before the clinic ever started, which was to get the consents. And for that, the school office staff was very helpful. Was it acceptable? Well, I found that many schools had teacher advocates. They even had competitions between classes for who could get the most informed consents signed back. There was broad administrator support and broad school nurse support in this set of 24. Parents supported it afterwards. There were very, very few complaints and at least an equal number of requests for the school to do it the subsequent year. They really appreciated the time saving and the sense of safety if the child got that vaccine at the school. As far as local medical doctors, physicians, providers, we were concerned that some of them would feel that this was business being taken away from them. In fact, there were only two complaints, and these were due to, misinformation that could be cleared up. Seven programs were openly supported by doctors, including a couple of key champions that were critical in getting the program started. So that did not end up being a problem in these schools. We looked at the opportunity cost, that is, how much work was missed. First of all, no essential services were dropped. We asked about this extensively. Only two programs had to hire or chose to hire a backfill nurse as a temp to complete some of the work that would otherwise be done that day. Most programs considered this part of their normal job and took, I don't think I'd be wrong in saying, extreme satisfaction in seeing this program done. They felt it was part of their mission, and that even though it was hard work, it was very gratifying. Those who stretched themselves to that day or another day to complete their regular work caught up within a few days, in a couple of cases, a few weeks. They did not see that part as a hardship at all. And finally, was it sustainable? Initially, as the information was coming in, I was having doubts about whether this could be sustainable. But we asked the question directly, do you anticipate this either definitely or probably going to happen again next year? And this is without any corporation providing vaccine. And 15 of the 24 programs said yes. They are likely to do it next year, even though they won't get free vaccine from that route. I think this is very important when you look at the new ACIP recommendation about kids 6 months to 18 years getting this every year. The common requests of for the government were more funding, which translates typically to vaccine more than staff, CDC to run a promotional campaign to support their efforts, and standardized consent forms, because many of them, in this case, were using pretty arcane legal documents provided by MedImmune, and they weren't really satisfactory. They all used the VIS. The limitations of this, of course, are that it's not a probability sample. It's a small group of local health departments. Are these the are these particularly strong health departments? Are these ones in which there's a champion for seasonal flu vaccine? Really hard for us to know. And of course, it was strongly influenced by the manufacturer making vaccine available for free for these 2 years. So when these disappear, which is the present year, we'll be able to take a better look and see. There are some important issues that are remaining. So if 40 or so percent of U.S. children get flu vaccine free from VFC, what about the other 60%? How are we going to provide for them? Will local health departments bill for these? Will they use a community vaccinator to bill? Who will stock the vaccine and pay up front for it? These are unanswered. Should TIV be used en masse in school-aged children, especially the young children? And you know, here I'm reminded of a story of a couple of first graders, two girls, and they were really afraid of the LAIV, even though they were shown how it was done. So they decided that they would hold hands and that one nurse would give this kid, another nurse would give this kid the vaccine, and they were okay then. So, you know, as a father, I can get into that. If you use TIV, will the clinic flow suffer? There were a couple of programs that did TIV regularly, and they had, you know, you guys go to LAIV, you guys go to TIV. What's the best role of volunteers? There's some dispute. The people who use volunteers for vaccine administration say it works well, and the volunteers show up. And other programs that rely on them only for the clinic flow issues and the shuttling of kids around say that they shouldn't and probably can't give the vaccine. Something to be discussed at length. And I think we should be cognizant that there are other models, including a massive buildup of local provider programs in the evening and after hours, that might be able to take some of this responsibility. In the end, we conclude that a very broad range of vaccination rates resulted. It's clearly highest in the elementary school kids, where it was a nearly 50% uptake, which was a joy to see. If the program gets the right high-level support from the school district, the model works well, and that's what we saw throughout here. There was an enormous upfront concentrated workload for the local health department. Can't be underestimated. The regular work did not appear to suffer. This work was highly rewarding, and the local health departments did not think they could take the vaccine and incidental costs out of their ordinary operating expenses. They needed support separately for that.